what drives you to be a photographer?
I became enchanted by photography when I was about 13 years old. A neighborhood friend showed me how to develop a roll of film and to make a print. And I thought that was pretty wonderful stuff, to be able to take that film out of the camera and go into a dark place, usually the family bathroom, close the door and stuff the cracks with the towels and so forth. And you could buy the chemicals for about 15 cents. Kodak put out a little package of developing materials for about 15 cents. So it was really very economical. It became a passion very quickly. I began using the family camera constantly and the family bathroom constantly, which created some problems at home, but that's a whole other story. There was six of us living in a two-bedroom, one-bath apartment. But I've been in love with photography ever since, and there have been many times over the years when I considered changing careers. After I had done three seasons of Star Trek and two seasons of Mission Impossible, from 1966 to about 1970, 71, I actually considered a serious change. And I went to school at UCLA to complete my photography studies. I realized then that I did not want to do commercial photography. I wanted to do what's known as fine art photography. I didn't want to do photography on demand for magazines or fashion people or whatever. And I realized that I better stick with my day job where I could make a living, because I wasn't going to make a living with photography. But for the last 13 or 14 years, this is a long answer to a short question. The last, I guess, 13 or 14 years, I have concentrated almost exclusively on photography, done very little else. And I've had a great satisfaction doing it.
So you were fascinated by the process, but did you have any influences from painting or other people's photography, or was it really all about the process at that time?
It was the process early on. Later, I became aware of some of the great photographers who had worked in photography as an art form. And in 1971, when I went back to school at UCLA, I studied under a wonderful teacher named Robert Heineken, who is a legend in the photography world, because he was instrumental in moving photography over into an art form, using photography as an art device to create art, as a process to create art. And his teaching was all about thematic photography. Why are you shooting pictures? It takes a long time for some people to answer that question. I did not want to do photojournalism. I did not want to do, as I said, commercial photography, working for advertising agencies. I wanted to use photography as a personal expression in a creative process. And it took me some time. Although I had developed my craft early on, it took me some time to understand what my thematic interests were. And those have only come into focus in the last 10, 12 years.
Do you hope to provoke a response from the audience, that they have a conversation about your art, or are you more interested in your own creation and your own personal response?
Wonderful question. For a long time, I took great pleasure in hearing people look at my photographs and say, "That's beautiful." And I was satisfied with that up to a point. Then I began to discover that there was something beyond creating pretty and beautiful pictures, that if my work was personal and authentic, that I might be able to provoke discussion of a different kind. And that's what led me to finally find my voice to do work that other photographers were not doing. Not that they couldn't, it's just that what I learned to do was work that came out of my own sensibility, my own interests, my own background, my own life, my own concerns, so that my photography began to look, I think, unlike the photography of other artists.
So when your work is on display and you see audience looking at certain pictures over other pictures, how do you react to something like that? Do you just sort of let it roll off your back, or you say, "Well, that's just kind of interesting"?
Well, what I hear in comments now are come in the form of more questions. I don't hear quite so much "that's beautiful." I get questions. who is this person? What does this photograph mean? How did you come to do this? What are you saying with this photograph? What are you saying with this book of photographs? It's thematic. It has to do with it's conceptual. And I don't carry a camera. I don't go out on streets or travel with a camera shooting things that I see. I develop a thematic concept, an idea of something that I'd like to express with a camera. I formulate images in my mind and then set out to photograph those images.
Well, when you conceive that image in your mind,
mm-hmm.
where does that come from?
That's the creative process, and that's unpredictable. It might come from something that I read in a book or a magazine or a newspaper. It might come from something I come across on the internet. It might come from some event that took place in my childhood that I get back in touch with because some event awakens that memory. And that's unpredictable. That's like asking any artist, where do you get your ideas? You know, they come from yourself and the ethos. If you're lucky, an idea comes along.
How do you know when to shoot the picture?
I think my experience in film and television has been very helpful in understanding how to go about making the photograph. I bring together the necessary elements. I've worked with a lot of models in the past number of years, and often that's my first project, is to find the appropriate person for the look that I'm after. And even at that, my work has shifted somewhat in the last more recent years, in that for a number of years I hired models to help me express these ideas, and the photographs were not about the models, they were about the ideas. In the last much more recent years, my work has been much more about the people in the photographs, and they were the essence of the concept that I was working on, or they are. So it's a question of finding those specific people, or if they enter my life, I don't need to find them, they enter my life, and then I decide that these are people that I want to take photographs of.
The Full Body Project looks at the concepts of beauty and sexuality with nude pictures of large women. Do
right.
you see your photographs playing a role in beginning a dialogue about what beauty is or isn't in our society?
Very much so. Very much so. I was showing some earlier work, specifically some work from an earlier book called Shekhinah, which was about the feminine aspect of God. And those models in that book were of a much more typical classic body type. When I had finished this presentation, this seminar discussion of that work, a lady approached me, a large-bodied woman, and said, "I am a model. I am a different body type than what you've been working with, and I wonder if you'd be interested in working with me." And this was a challenge. It was a unique experience for me. I discussed it with my wife, who gives me good guidance on some of these matters, and she said, "You should try it." A long time ago, a very important art director and curator said to me, "Do what scares you," as a creative springboard. And this scared me. Because I did not know what I was getting into with this body type. She was a very large woman. She came to our studio that we have in our home up in Northern California, and we photographed her there, nude, reclining on a simple black table with a black background. And I shot the photographs rather quickly because, frankly, I was very nervous about what I was doing and I wanted to be done with it. When the photographs were done, I realized that I had captured something that looked like marble sculpture. I shot her in black and white, and it looked like marble sculpture. And whenever I showed photographs of her, a couple or a few, along with other photographs, she got all the attention because she was so unique, she was so individual, and so special. The other women were very much about the light, the form, the body. They had dancers' bodies or models' bodies. This woman was unique as a nude model, and the questions became about her, not about the photographs. Who is she? How did you find her? Why did she want to be photographed? What does it mean to you to photograph a body like that? How did you feel about her? These were very intriguing questions, and I thought, there's something going on here that has to do with our cultural view of beauty and our cultural view of body image. So tapping into that, I located a group of women in San Francisco who were burlesque performers and called themselves the Fat Bottom Review, and all large-bodied women. And I made contact with them and developed some ideas about what kind of groupings I would like for them. I sent them photographs of groupings that I would like to emulate, and then flew to San Francisco and photographed them in a gallery in San Francisco, and they became the beginning of the Full Body Project.
Is it just as challenging and artistic for you when you develop your own pictures, or do you see it as, you know, the real work, the composition, the framing, the lighting? Once that's done, the printing part is just an extension of what you have to do to wrap things up.
For a long time, the printing was a very, very important part of the creative process. Just exactly how much contrast, how much brightness, how much darkness, how to compose it, what to crop in, what to crop out. It was a very big part of the process for me, and I spent many, many, many hours in the darkroom working on that aspect of the work. More recently, I have begun to be less concerned with how the print is made. In fact, in many cases now, working digitally, handing that over to a good laboratory and having them make me a proof, and then I'll make comments on it, and it goes back and they make me a final print. So I'm spending much less time in the darkroom, and I think it's because I'm much less concerned with the process and more concerned with the content. I was very much concerned with process for a long time.
You've said that you have the luxury of not having to make a living as a photographer, and you can just absorb ideas, get an image in your mind, and photograph it.
Right.
What do you think your pictures would look like if you didn't have that luxury?
Well, I know what they would look like. They would be more acceptable to an editor of a fashion magazine or a newspaper advertisement or something that you would see in a television commercial. They would look less conceptual and much more commercial to sell a product. Those photographs are designed to sell a product. I actually spent some time following commercial photographers around while I was studying at UCLA in the 70s to see what their life and work was all about. And I followed a very successful commercial photographer through weeks of his work being by his side or behind him every day for hours and watching him shoot fashion photography, shoot car commercials, shoot cosmetic photography. And there would be a group of advertising executives on the photography stage with him. He would shoot a Polaroid of the item, the object, or the person, whatever the subject was, and then we'd hand that Polaroid to this group of gentlemen in suits, and they would all look at it and make their comments. And the comments would be, well, can we touch it? Can we make her eyebrow a little darker? Is the color on her lipstick exactly what we want? I thought it should be a little bit more orange or a little bit more red. Are the clothes hanging properly? Can we make that skirt or that dress drape a little bit differently? That sort of comments. An adjustment would be made, and then they would shoot again. And I just decided that I didn't want to do that kind of collaborative photography. I wanted to do personal expression. So I walked away from that kind of work entirely. I did not want to make work that looked like that.
You've been in more than 50 movies or television shows. You directed the movie Three Men and a Baby. You write poetry. You're a photographer. Do you ever wish that you would be known for your entire body of work and not just the role of Spock?
I'm really okay about all of this. I'm very, very comfortable with it. I love the Spock character. I think there's no question that it is the most known of all the work that I've done, the Spock character in Star Trek. And I admire the character. I have written glowingly about the character and my relationship with him. I've just completed doing it again for the first time in about 18 years. In the new Star Trek film, which will be opening in May, and I'm delighted with the result. It may indeed be the last time that I will put on that makeup and do that character. The character, that work has given me the opportunity to do all the other things that you mentioned. it all springs from the success of this of Star Trek and the Spock character. I have been invited to do narrations. I have been invited to work in theaters all around the United States, which has been a great joy for me because I started in the theater and I have great love for the theater. It has given me the financial freedom to choose the projects that I do based on what I want to do rather than what I need to do to support myself and a family. The photography is very much subsidized by the Spock character and the work that I did in Star Trek. So I have absolutely no complaint about it. But I'll tell you an interesting story. Recently, my wife and I were at a theater event in Los Angeles, and we were walking to the parking lot after the event, and I found myself walking and chatting with Tom Hanks, who I know somewhat, and a young man recognized him and came running up and said, Mr. Hanks, can I have my picture taken with you? And Mr. Hanks said, yeah, sure, who's going to take the picture? And then the young man recognized me, and he said, oh, Mr. Nimoy, you're a wonderful photographer. Will you take the picture? So I did. I took a photograph of him and Tom Hanks. That young man now has a photograph of himself with Tom Hanks taken by Leonard Nimoy. Not bad. So there is some recognition for the other work, and I appreciate it, but I recognize the fact that Spock will be the major influence.
What do you think it is about Spock, though, that made him such a universally loved character?
Do you have a couple of days?
Sure.
We could talk about him endlessly. There are so many times I've been asked that question, and my answers have changed from time to time. I suspect that people found him solid and substantial and dependable and reliable, someone good to know and to have around in a crisis, someone intelligent enough to help solve serious problems, a serious professional, a scientist who knows his work, knows how to do his work, and knows how to logically put together answers to complex questions. I think for some people, there's the notion that there's something hidden inside there, that if we could just watch him very carefully, something hidden will sneak out and we'll learn more about him. He's an enigma to some people. I think for some women, I've been told that he's a challenge, believing that there's a warm heart underneath that cold exterior, and maybe we could get in touch with that warm heart, or maybe he needs nurturing. It goes on and on. He's a fascinating character, and I'm very lucky to have been given the chance to portray him.
And you've talked about growing up in Boston, how that shaped your experience to really allow you to play Spock.
Yeah, well, Spock is a classic alien. Not only from another planet, but alien in his parentage, human mother, Vulcan father. So not quite at home on Vulcan, where kids teased him because he was a half-breed. Not quite at home on Earth because he's this strange-looking alien that doesn't look like the rest of the humans on Earth. Chose to go into Starfleet where he could be taken for his expertise and his contribution rather than the way he looked or what his heritage was all about. And I grew up in Boston, which was a very Catholic city, and being Jewish, I was in a small minority. The neighborhood that I lived in was perhaps 75% Catholic and 25% Jewish. So I was a member of a minority, and I grew up understanding what it felt like to be that other, that outsider person, not one of the mainstream. And I was able to identify with Spock's condition as a result of that.
You have a pair of Mr. Spock's ears at your house.
I do.
So I gather then Star Trek crosses your mind in some aspect every day, just about.
Every day. Oh. There isn't a day goes by, or hardly a day goes by, when someone doesn't make some comment to me about Spock and Star Trek. And very often it's very flattering, and I'm often very touched by it, very touched by it. I just completed a job in San Francisco where a lady came backstage after the performance and very emotionally told me that I had been instrumental in helping her through a very difficult period in her life when she had cancer and was undergoing chemotherapy and needed some kind of a role model to put her in a proper kind of relationship to her emotions and to see her way through this, this very difficult time and process. And these are very touching experiences for me, very touching. I feel very honored to be able to have had some kind of positive effect on people.
Has Mr. Spock's persona rubbed off on you in any way?
Yeah, I'm sure that has happened. I'm sure. I was not quite so logical and not quite so even-tempered before Mr. Spock came into my life. I think I learned a lot about how to create a better balance for myself and to make myself adjust more comfortably to what might have been emotional situations. You know, particularly during the time when I was doing the television series, I was in that character more than I was out of it. For months on end, I was in that Spock makeup and character 12, 14 hours a day, 5 days a week. And a very short time, very brief period of time at the end of the day, out of the character and before going to sleep, and right back into the character very shortly after getting up in the morning, and being out of it only on Saturdays and Sundays. And even then, I could feel the residue of the mindset of the character. So there's no question that Spock changed my emotional design, if you will. It had a profound effect on me, as well as a lot of other people.
Does the Vulcan nerve pinch really work?
It does if the person that I'm pinching reacts properly. That's funny. No, it's a conceit. It's an idea. It's just a fun idea that we developed on the show.
Was there something else that you wanted to add that perhaps I didn't cover?
I'm very much looking forward to this trip. I'm looking forward to showing my work. I'm looking forward to getting reaction to the work in Birmingham. I've been to Birmingham a number of times over the years. I think maybe the first time ever was when I was in the Army stationed in Atlanta. In Georgia, and made a weekend trip with some buddies to Birmingham. Years later, I acted in Birmingham. I think the first time I did, maybe more than once, but I remember vividly acting in a production of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, in which I played Brick. There was a lady that I knew in Los Angeles who had been a Miss Alabama some years earlier, Jean Moody. And she was invited to come back and play the lead feminine role in the play, and she asked if I could be invited. I was in an acting class with her, and she asked if I could be invited to come along to play Brick, which I did. I had a wonderful time, met some wonderful people. I think it was the Town and Gown Theater, if I remember correctly. So I have fond memories of Birmingham. I'm looking forward to coming back.